Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The path to an NFL championship starts in 32 unique locker rooms across the country.
I ain't blinking. Don't you blink. You blink, I'll cut your eyelids off.
But it ends at just one common ground, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hey, they said they were going to the Twin Cities.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Will a living legend stand atop the Super Bowl mountain yet again?
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Or will we crown a new icon as the confetti falls?
As the young maestro on his game today.
Only four schools will make it to their ultimate destination, the college football playoff.
I mean, it only matters where you end up at the end.
Who will be invited? Who will be left out?
I don't know whether heartbreak actually covers that.
Football's weekly drama is documented here. Sunday Morning Football with your host, T.A., only on CBS Sports Radio.
Touchdown!
And a happy Sunday. To you, everybody. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Thanks so much for joining us. Once again, we're back at it, breaking down the college football landscape. Yesterday, the Army-Navy thriller in the snow, and Baker Mayfield has his Heisman Trophy. We'll look inside today's NFL weekend. Could we have an NFC Championship game preview in mid-December? We've got Jake Plummer, who's going to join us, Arizona State legend. He has been openly critical of Sun Devils fans who have been critical of the hire of Herman Edwards. We'll talk to Jake Plummer, Sun Devils legend, icon, coming up here on the show in 15 minutes from now. Plus, next hour, Vegas virtuoso Todd Furman's going to join us. We'll look at the NFL action today from a boys in the desert perspective. As always, I'd love to get you guys here involved in the show. What are you feeling about today's NFL slate? About yesterday's Army-Navy tilt? About the Heisman? About all of this? Hit me up at 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, hit me up, DA on CBS. 35 minutes from now, we've got Excessive Celebration, the best play-by-play calls of the college football season. We'll go back over the highlights of 2017 from college football's regular season and conference championship games. You can always watch the show. Remember, watchda.com. If you're hanging around your office right now, your sports den, the man cave, the living room, the game room, the kids room, whatever it is, you can watch the show, pop it up on your smart TV or on your phone. Take us with you wherever you go. If you're out getting ready for a day of football watching, honey-do list, taking the kids around, maybe doing some shopping for the holidays, watchda.com. That is available on your phone. It is mobile-friendly. We're coming in hot next hour. We start with your Sunday Gunslinger.
In football's Wild West, there are winners and there are losers. He shoots from the hip. DA is the Sunday Gunslinger.
We need men like him to make towns safer, decent people.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
Now jerk that pistol and go to work.
All right, let's do it.
You'll get no debate from me that Baker Mayfield deserved the Heisman Trophy. Just look at his numbers. 41 touchdowns to 5 interceptions in a power conference, winning the conference championship, the conference championship game, and going to the college football playoff. You'll get no argument from me that Baker Mayfield was deserving of the Heisman as the best quarterback and the best player in college football. This one was a runaway all season long. The next question is,
is Baker Mayfield good enough to win a championship at Oklahoma? And what does it do for his draft stock moving forward?
It's motivating for me to be the best in the country. It's not about motivating to win the award, but I want to be the very best. And so that's where the motivation comes from. There's something to be said about just having good old confidence in yourself and just true belief. And so for me, my journey, like I said earlier, is not over, but it's about, you know, facing adversity. If there's mistakes, being upfront about it and then moving forward and being better in the future.
So the stats are obviously there for Baker Mayfield. More than 4,300 yards passing, 41 touchdowns, only 5 picks. Winners of 12 games of the Big 12 championship. Hey, Baker put up great numbers, great stats, put up wins as well. In terms of a college football championship, I don't see it from Oklahoma. They can score with anybody, but I just don't feel like their defense is good enough over the next 2 games, if they get 2 games, to be able to beat 2 really good foes, Georgia, and then, of course, whoever they face in the championship game. But it's going to be fun to watch. I think Georgia versus Oklahoma is going to be a dandy because it's Styles making a fight. You've got the great offense of Baker Mayfield and the Sooners versus a great defense against Georgia. To me, the Bulldogs are more balanced. We've got plenty more weeks to talk about that matchup moving forward. But Baker Mayfield's going to have to put up probably 45 points in these games to try to win these games. As for his NFL prospects, he's an unconventional prospect because he's only 6'1". He's built a lot thicker, more like a tank, more like a fullback than usually your prototypical quarterbacks in the NFL. And so Baker Mayfield also enters a quarterback field that's as deep as we've had in years. If you look at CBS Sports' college football quarterback rankings going into the draft, Baker Mayfield's not even in the top 5. They've got Lamar Jackson, Louisville number 1, last year's Heisman Trophy winner. Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State 2. Josh Rosen, UCLA 3. Sam Darnold, USC 4. And then Baker Mayfield number 5. He'll get a job somewhere. He'll get drafted somewhere. But I don't think you hand the keys over to your car for Baker Mayfield because, number 1, he played in a conference that hurt him. The numbers were great, but defenses in the Big 12 are just not valued by NFL evaluators like other conferences because there's so much space to work with. So many completions, so many big plays for Baker Mayfield come when there's not a defender within 5 yards of the wide receiver. That hurts him. And then, of course, the maturity issue hurts him. I am not ready to put him in the conversation with Johnny Manziel because Johnny Manziel was a human dumpster fire. Mayfield's not there. But is there a question mark about whether Mayfield can be trusted as your paid professional face of your franchise? Yeah, and there should be. Look, Baker hasn't done one thing. He's done a series of things that make you wonder if he'll ever get it. And this is one of those things where live by the sword, die by the sword. His emotion and his competitive fire has helped him get this far and helped him succeed. It's also made him look dopey a number of times on the football field. Army-Navy yesterday, in the snow. Once again, one of the greatest spectacles and coolest scenes we have in sports. Every year, seeing the emotion inside that building for 2 football programs that most of the country ignore up until yesterday is always brilliant to watch. But in the snow, even better. And to see the entire Army roster not wear any long sleeves, go sleeveless in the snow, was just too perfect. Too perfect for Army to be sleeveless in the snow as a team. Awesome upon awesome. And then the game itself was pretty cool as well. As Army took a late lead, but Navy tried to march down the field and kick the game-winning field goal. A couple of penalties back them up, and it's a 48-yarder for Navy for the win.
For the win, Loring, 48-yarder, on the way, no good! enough leg.
He hit it.
He pushed it just a little bit left.
He hit it beautifully, didn't he?
Plenty of leg, but wide left. And the despair on the kicker and on the Navy side and the jubilation of the cadets and Army's Black Knights on the field right now.
Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson on the call for CBS. What a cool ending to that game. My heart goes out to a college football kicker in that moment that misses a 48-yarder. Just gutsy. You could see the emotion on the kicker's face of losing it, of missing it, of letting his team down. But you got to feel great for Army as well. I grew up very close to West Point. I know how beautiful and how awesome that college campus is. I've been on it many of times before. Just one of the coolest areas in college football to watch a game right on the Hudson River. And for Army to have gone a decade and a half not winning a game of this series and having their lunch handed to them year after year after year by Navy to now win two in a row and breaking that streak last year and then surviving again. Boy, Coach Munkin has done an amazing job at West Point, an amazing job, and what a season for Army. There's something to be proud in once again to watch for college football fans. That was great yesterday. I absolutely loved it, and I loved how seriously CBS takes that broadcast every year. It's a special feeling. It's a special broadcast. I loved watching it. That was the call by Nessler and Danielson. Finally, today in the NFL, do we have an NFC championship game preview? Eagles and Rams, two great young quarterbacks.
We've really had the same approach all year, you know, whether after a win or a couple losses, we've had the same approach. It's just on to the next, you know. It's study the tape, learn from it, win or lose, and just go 1-0 every day, every week. And again, we say it almost every week up here, but it sounds cliche, but that's the goal, you know. Just win the day, go 1-0, and you know, we can't really dwell on it too much. You know, I think it's exciting anytime two young quarterbacks like us face off, you know, and offense playing their defense and vice versa. But I think it's definitely exciting for the league. And, you know, Jared and I are both excited about it, and it'll be a fun one.
So that's Carson Wentz going into today's game on the road in Los Angeles, 4:25 Eastern kick on Fox. I love Carson Wentz. I think he's going to be great for a really long time. I think he's going to end up taking the mantle, him and Deshaun Watson, of the guys that you have to watch. Like Peyton and Brady before them. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be two of the greatest of all time. I'm just saying, like Aaron Rodgers is right now, you pay to watch him on Sundays. You have to tune in to see what they do on a Sunday night or a Monday night. I think Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson will be those two guys moving forward. Deshaun Watson obviously is injured for the season, but Wentz has a chance to redeem himself, and the Eagles do as well after losing last week in Seattle. If they go to LA and lose again today, you have to take a step back and ask yourself, did the Philadelphia Eagles simply beat up on bad opponents to get to this point in time with their record? If you look at their record, their wins really came against non-playoff teams to build up this wonderful record toward the end of the year. But now you got to beat the big boys, especially on the road. It's even more difficult, especially on the other coast. Let's see if the Eagles have what it takes to rebound. And I'll say this also. Wentz versus Goff, Rams versus Eagles is why it's so crucial to invest in young quarterbacks. And if you get it right, it changes everything. Because the Eagles and the Rams are not where they are right now unless Wentz and Goff are pulling the trigger the way that they are and developing this way early in their careers. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. It's Sunday Morning Football. And coming up next, Arizona State legend, the icon, the snake, Jake Plummer is going to join us. He's been openly critical of Sun Devils fans that have not believed that Herm Edwards was a good hire and has already written off the Herm hire. We'll talk to Plummer about why he feels like that's unfair and why Herm can be a great fit. We'll talk to him coming up here next. CBS Sports Radio.
NFL action begins next Sunday with the NFL Today, followed by a full slate of regional games. You'll say, you saw it on CBS Sports.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Football, everybody. Thanks for being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. The coaching carousel in college continues, and it continues with an old face from the NFL game. Analyst Herm Edwards is now back to being a head coach. He was the former head coach of the New York Jets and the Kansas City Chiefs. And he takes over an Arizona State program looking to become one of the bigger programs, one of the more successful programs at the top of the Pig 12. Jake Plummer is a legendary figure at Arizona State, and he has spoken in defense of Herm Edwards and made some news this week. And Jake, who's a former Pro Bowler, Pac-10 Player of the Year, former quarterback of the Broncos and the Arizona Cardinals, joins us this morning here on the show. Jake, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, brother. Always good to catch up with you. And you were very vocal. You were very opinionated in defense of Herm Edwards, and you really kind of took the Arizona State fans to task who were negative about this. Why did this strike a chord with you?
Well, and Herm Edwards or whoever it is that they're going in the direction to hire, I know, you know, Herm is the guy now, but I guess my main point was, you know, as a Sun Devil, someone that, you know, laid it all on the line for that school and did some great things with a lot of other great players, I find it, you know, discouraging when prior to anything happening, all the negativity and naysayers saying 2 years, you know, we'll be looking for another coach and what is this process and this and that, you know, like the fans just being negative. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I've always been a pretty positive guy and thought the best way to go about anything is have a positive look and to encourage people to stay positive even through the negatives and the downfalls that you go through in sports. And, you know, I think if anybody out there doubts the hire, you know, all will be told and come to truth in time. But I believe that Herm Edwards' track record and what he's done in his past and the kind of guy that he is, the morals and the values that he has, I believe he is a good hire for this Arizona State football program. I'm happy about it. What I'm not happy about is the turnover. You know, coaches staying 1 year, leaving to go, you know, like Willie Taggart, leaving Oregon to go to Florida State. Florida State's going to pay how many millions of dollars to pay off his contract with Oregon to have him be their coach? Is he really that good of a coach? You know, was Jimbo Fisher really that great of a coach, way far and above every other coach in the world, or did he have Jameis Winston for a couple years, a player? So, you know, it's about getting players, and I think Herm Edwards will attract guys to Arizona State that are players, that want to not only play for Arizona State, but to possibly, you know, increase their opportunity and chances to play at the next level, which he has plenty of experience in. And I just don't like the negativity. I don't like the money these coaches are making is a little outlandish. Good for them. I mean, if I was a head coach, I wouldn't be complaining either. But there's some disparity here from, you know, a coach who is just one person coming in to forming a coaching staff, to recruiting the right players, to having the ability to put a team out there to win ball games. Is he worth $8 million a year? You know, I do not believe so. It comes down to players. Coaches coach, which is great, but players are the ones out there making the plays. And I'm excited to see what Herm does on the recruiting trail and how he takes over this program. I was a little sad to see Todd Graham go. I thought he coached really well this year amidst all the adversity and you know, the swirling of him being fired no matter what. I mean, he showed us that he is a good coach and has a staff there that knows how to get it done with all the doubt cast in the air during the season. So all in all, I just wanted to, you know, throw everything out there, let the past go, fans, and be encouraged by a forward move by Ray Anderson, whether he went through the process to interview a bunch of other people or not. Ray Anderson believes in a mission and has a vision for this program, and Herm Edwards was his guy, and he got him. Now let's see where they go with it. Let's sit back and enjoy it.
Jake Plummer joins us here on Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio. One of the interesting things about this marriage between Herm Edwards and the athletic department at Arizona State is this quote-unquote CEO structure, where it's less of a football coach on the ground controlling everything and more of a CEO above. Some people have questioned whether that can work at the collegiate level. What do you think? Can that structure work?
You know, I don't know enough about the other teams that have success if they have that structure. But I know that a head coach is more than just in his office, you know, diagramming plays and putting forth blitzes and recruiting guys. I mean, he's a man of the people out in the community. If you look what, you know, Todd Graham did at ASU during his career there, they had a couple years where they didn't do so well, but I think that was partially because he was out and about raising money to expand the facilities, to renovate Sun Devil Stadium, to add a football, locker room suitable to recruit against other Pac-12 teams that have done the same thing. So he was playing, you know, CEO to some degree. And when you do that too much, I think you lose focus on what's really important, and that's the product on the field has to be competitive, and they have to have players that make plays to win games. If you don't, then you could hire any coach in the country, and it doesn't matter. I mean, you could bring the brightest, most hot coach out there to Arizona State. If you don't get players on the field that make plays like Manny Wilkins made plays, like N'Keal Harry, like these guys that made plays for Arizona State, it doesn't matter if he's a CEO, if he's a recruiter, if he's a handshaker, or he's the best mental mind in the world. You got to get the right players out on the field. So the structure that he's setting up there, Ray Anderson is doing with the Sun Devils, is kind of modeled after the NFL. And if he feels that that's the right route to go, he's hired and paid to do that. And I think to doubt him and to be mad about that or cast doubt and wait 2 years for the next hire, it's really not what the players feel like. You know, they want to win now, and fans, have a right to express their opinions, but I'm always one to try to shed a little light on staying positive.
Do you think that negativity is worse today? Because there's always been pressure in college football to win, and fans have always wanted to win and win right away. But do you think that kind of initial outrage over a hire, negativity on social media or sports talk radio or wherever, is worse today than it was maybe, say, when you started playing at Arizona State?
I don't know if it's worse, but I think it's just easily accessible now. And if you want to dig into it and go look, you can find people talking bad about kitty cats. I mean, kitties are cute. They like to play. They're sweet. They meow, and there's someone out there bagging on kitty cats because he feels it's necessary. So, there's always going to be those people out there that live in a negative world, that are probably pretty miserable, that like to yell at the TV, that their week is, it goes how their team goes. Those are the ones that drive this industry, of course, but they're a little bit, not so much fanatical, but almost lunatics about it. And I believe that, the negative stuff out there has always been around. It's just, you don't hear people's voices as much now or back then as you do now, because everybody, not everybody, but anybody with a social media account can say whatever they want. And I'd love to keep track of the numerous fans that bagged on Herm Edwards and the hire, be able to go back to them in a couple of years and parade them out on the field and say, yeah, these guys didn't believe in you, Herm, but that's not going to happen. That's looking backwards, right? So I'm always one to look forward, look to what's going to happen next. And I'm excited about Herm Edwards coming here. He's coached numerous Hall of Famers. So if you want to go find another college candidate, there's some out there that have coached some other Hall of Famers, but he's coached them in their pro careers. And I believe what he brings to Arizona State will be holding players accountable, making them live up to a set of standards and qualities to be young men first, and then also great football players. And he's got a ton of passion. And I always played with a ton of passion and led with a ton of passion, and I love seeing them hire a guy that's going to come in here with the fire burning, wanting to succeed at all costs. And that can be contagious so long as we let it, pilfer down from not only the administration but all the way into the community there in Tempe and all the fans. And ultimately, it's winning ball games to convince them.
Jake Plummer joining us here on the show. Before I let you go, we had Aeneas Williams on the show earlier in the week. He was the subject of a Football Life documentary by NFL Films this week. NFL Hall of Famer. And boy, he is just one of the coolest guys to sit down and talk with. What are your memories of playing alongside Aeneas?
That guy is and was and will always be one of the most amazing human beings I've ever, been afforded the opportunity not only to meet but to become friends with, teammates, to put it all out on the line with, to work hard for a common goal. I love that guy. He's as stand-up as they come. I can recall back working out in Arizona. In the off-season, we'd go throw with the receivers, and we'd meet the DBs. We'd go out to a high school, local high school somewhere, usually in the late afternoon, 110, 112, whatever the temperature was. We'd all run our routes. He'd guard everybody, and then when all the receivers were done and they were ready to go home, they were petered out and tired, he would ask me to throw him some go routes. And I thought, okay, I'll throw him a couple go routes. And he would run close to 10, maybe even 20 full-speed go routes, and he'd tell me, throw it out there. I want to try to close and get the overthrown ball. He was just a relentless you know, pursuer of perfection, a relentless worker, and a great leader. And, yeah, man, that guy's as good as they come.
It was such a cool special coming up for Football Life on the NFL Network this week. Hey, before I let you go, also, Jake Plummer is part of ReadyListPro.com, where pro player benefits, playbook learning, a testing tool is all there. This is really cool to kind of teach a lot of people a lot of different cool things. So how can people kind of check this out? What would they be looking for?
Yeah, right, like what you said, ReadyListPro.com. It's not just for the professional level. It's for pros, college, high school, all the way down to youth. We have a youth app on right now that we're making that will be very viable for young coaches starting out at the youth level and teaching kids from 7-on-7 all the way to 11-on-11. We're basically just trying to raise the IQ level for football, for offensive football. You know, a lot of guys come out of college. They've never been in a huddle. They've never made a play call or heard a call played or play called where you have to know what you have to do according to what the word is and the concept. And so we're trying to just raise that level in hopes that players can play faster, cut down on mental errors, learn through all different modalities, all the different learning styles out there, be tested, be held accountable, then ultimately go out and hopefully win more ball games and be less prone to injury when you know what you're doing. So we're having a good time doing it. I'm reaching out to a lot of great connections, reconnecting with some coaches and players that are in the industry now. And, you know, we're having fun just trying to provide a tool to coaches to help them install and teach and then get testing results back on how well the kids are learning their offensive scheme and system and concepts. And it's a great deal. We're going to be out at the AFCA in Charlotte and looking for any coach out there that wants to raise the level of his players. We got the tool for you.
Very cool. The website is ReadyListPro.com. Jake Plummer, former Pac-10 Player of the Year, of course, star hero at Arizona, stay with the Sun Devils, NFL quarterback as well with the Broncos and the Cardinals, joining us here on the show. Jake, it's always fun to catch up, buddy. I always love picking your brain, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity. You guys have a great Sunday. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on the show.
Back at you. Jake Plummer joining us this morning here on CBS Sports Radio and Sunday Morning Football. When we come back, we've got your excessive celebration. Now, because there was only really one college football game, the best play-by-play calls coming up are going to be the best of the season for college football. So stick around for that. DA, Sunday Morning Football, CBS Sports Radio.
You have a reservation for year-round excitement with CBS Sports. Your ticket to action.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Sign out to be an O Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. Fast, easy, free. Only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Welcome inside another edition of Sunday Morning Football, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us. We're with you 9 until 11 a.m. Eastern Time every single Sunday, and we'll be doing this right through the Super Bowl. So make sure you make us appointment listening every Sunday morning as we'll react to the college football games of the bowl season and, of course, the college football playoffs in a couple of weeks and the stretch run of the NFL season and the NFL playoffs. Later on today, could have an NFC Championship game preview where the Eagles and the Rams will go at it from Los Angeles. The Eagles are a fascinating story because it's felt like so much so soon for them, but Carson Wentz is the real deal and will only get better with more experience in the NFL. But I also love Doug Peterson's play calling, game planning with him. I like how the front office have supplemented Carson Wentz with talent around him, re-signing Alshon Jeffrey recently, giving him weapons to work with, good tight ends, good running backs out of the backfield, and Wentz is taking advantage of that all. But we need to see if the Eagles rebound well after losing in Seattle, because let's face it, in that game, the Seahawks were the better team, were the aggressor, and really the Eagles were playing catch-up all night long. They can't afford to do that today because the Rams' offense is so prolific. You're not going to win in a shootout, and you're not going to win if you get down by a couple of touchdowns early in that game against Los Angeles. So, Rams and Eagles later on today, a good litmus test of these two teams. And we certainly could see these two teams in the NFC Championship game. Although I would say right now, the Minnesota Vikings to me feel like the best contender in the NFC to get to a Super Bowl, which is interesting because they'll be hosting the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. That Vikings defense is filthy. They are awesome. They are the best defense of the NFL on third downs. They get after the passer. They play great coverage. They're well-coordinated, great coach in Mike Zimmer, and I think they feed off his aggressiveness. And Case Keenum, actually, is helping win games, not just game managing. Keenum is taking advantage of this opportunity. And I give him all the credit in the world because Case Keenum felt like a bum coming into the season. Just another nobody off the pile, off the scrap heap of Bill O'Brien's Houston Texans quarterback pile. And he was never going to be really anything. But Keenum has taken advantage. He was supposed to be basically a placeholder up until Teddy Bridgewater got healthy or if Sam Bradford went down again. And Keenum has now been part of the reason they're winning, not just game managing. I give him a lot of credit. He's been much better than expected. I love Excessive Celebration each and every week where we listen back to the best play-by-play calls of the college football weekend. Of course, this weekend there was no college football outside of Army-Navy yesterday, which was awesome. So instead, let's go back and think about and listen to the best play-by-play calls of the college football season.
The soundtrack of college football chaos. The announcers losing their minds.
At the goal line, I think he caught it for a touchdown. He got it! He got it! He got it! Touchdown, Nick Matthews! The Cougars win it! The Cougars win it!
It's excessive celebration.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow!
Let's go back to September the 16th, where the Tennessee Volunteers and the Florida Gators were going at it. And in this game, it looked like the Volunteers might move to 3-0, and could Butch Jones keep his job? And so all Tennessee needed to do was defend the Hail Mary. Knock it down. Stay behind the receiver. Don't let the receiver get behind you. And of course, that's exactly what Tennessee allowed. And this was the beginning of the end for Butch Jones.
Franks dropping back, stepping up, running the ball, looking. He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone. It's a touchdown. And the Gators have won the game. Tyree Cleveland. Oh, my. I can't believe what I just saw. The Gators have won the ball game on a bomb thrown by Felipe Franks. And this place is an insane asylum again. Oh, my. Ball game. Gators have Tennessee again.
Mick Hubert, Gators IMG Sports Network on the call on the Hail Mary at the Swamp. The Swamp explodes. The Gators and Tennessee would both finish off very frustrating seasons. In fact, so much so that they both fired their coaches, Jim McElwain, a couple of weeks after that. Tennessee, of course, going through the disaster that was firing Butch Jones, hiring Greg Schiano. Firing Greg Schiano, looking for somebody else, changing an AD. Although I'll tell you what, I kind of like this hire Jeremy Pruitt. Not kind of, I really do. His recruiting is bar none. It's without question one of the best recruiters in the SEC. Knows the conference well, has learned at the foot of Nick Saban. There's been a bunch of guys like Kirby Smart, Mark D'Antonio, and others who have coached under Nick Saban and gone on, Jimbo Fisher, to do big things in college. That's usually a good thing on that coaching tree. I like that hire. It might not be a sexy hire, but Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, I like that hire very much. So maybe after all of that disaster, Tennessee got it right. A month later, on October the 14th, the Miami Hurricanes were trying to keep their Cinderella undefeated season going. They were at home on a wet night against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. And the Hurricanes, who were dancing with the devil all season long, needed a crazy fourth down conversion and catch to keep the streak alive and to remain undefeated.
waits for the snap. He takes it. Looking to throw. Steps up. Fires for Langham. Juggled around. Caught! What a catch! At the 15-yard line! A juggling catch falling down backwards! A spectacular catch by Langham! 28 yards! And a first down for Miami! Can you believe it?
Lightning strikes twice for the Miami Hurricanes.
Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey on Hurricanes Radio. In this game, Georgia Tech led 24-13 late in the third quarter. They led 24-16 going into the fourth quarter. But Miami pulled another rabbit out of the hat. It ended up winning 25-24 to remain 5-0, or remain undefeated and to move to 5-0. Of course, we know how Miami's season ended in the ACC championship game with a loss to Clemson. And finally, in what many consider the game of the year, Ohio State, Penn State in late October, it did not disappoint. Penn State jumped out to the early lead, led 21-3 in that game. They led by more than two touchdowns to the fourth quarter. And yet, JT Barrett was a force of nature. In the Buckeyes' comeback in the fourth quarter, he played quarterback as well as anybody has played quarterback in a clutch situation. That was a perfect, flawless fourth quarter for the quarterback of the Buckeyes, and it was also perfect that Gus Johnson, the always excitable, was on the call for Fox Sports.
He's been a conductor. First and 10 at the 16. Barrett looks, fires, touchdown Buckeyes! Marcus Ball, J.T. Barrett!
When you have a crazy comeback, you want Gus on the call. In this game, it was 21-3 Penn State. It was 35-20 Penn State. It was 38-27 Penn State. But three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, all from JT Barrett's arm, gives the Buckeyes a 39-38 win, vaults them into the Big Ten championship game, and of course, a win in the Big Ten championship game. Had the story ended differently, had Penn State held on to that lead and that win, Penn State probably would be in the college football playoff. And that's the slim margin between how Alabama got in. Remember, it came down to Bama versus Ohio State. Had Penn State won the Big Ten with one loss, they would have been in that college football playoff. Now, they all obviously lost to Michigan State as well, so one or two plays here or there. But if Penn State had held on to beat Ohio State and only lost to Michigan State and went on to win the Big Ten, they'd still be playing for a college football championship. But that's your excessive celebration. By next week, we're going to have bowl games. The bowl season kicks off this week, which is awesome. So excessive celebration will count down your great bowl game calls. It's college football's greatest time of the year is upon us. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Watch us at watchda.com. That's mobile friendly. When we come back, we're coming in hot. Ryan Shazier with a tragic injury. We'll update you on his status in the Steelers. Roger Goodell gets an extension. What does this mean for his owners? And Army's remarkable turnaround. Sunday Morning Football, CBS Sports Radio.
The path to an NFL championship starts in 32 unique locker rooms across the country.
I ain't blinking, don't you blink! You blink, I'll cut your eyelids off.
But it ends at just one common ground, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hey, they said they were going to the Twin Cities.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Will a living legend stand atop the Super Bowl mountain yet again?
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Or will we crown a new icon as the confetti falls?
As the young maestro on his game today.
Only four schools will make it to their ultimate destination, the college football playoff.
I mean, it only matters where you end up at the end.
Who will be invited? Who will be left out?
I don't know whether heartbreak actually covers that.
Football's weekly drama is documented here. Sunday Morning Football with your host, D.A., only on CBS Sports Radio.
Touchdown!
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Thanks for being with us, everybody, and a happy Sunday Morning Football to you. Coming up this hour on the show, Todd Furman, our Vegas virtuoso, is going to join us. He'll give us the view from the desert on today's NFL action. We'll also talk about the New York Giants head coaching search. Is it a top job? Chad Brown, former Patriots, Steelers, Seahawks linebacker, All-Pro and Pro Bowler, on the suspension of Rob Gronkowski for a game as the Patriots will play without Gronk against the Miami Dolphins. Aeneas Williams will hear from Pro Football Hall of Famer, subject of an NFL Films documentary on the NFL Network, Football Life This Week. And Nate Burleson of Good Morning Football, as well as the NFL on CBS. That's all coming your way this hour on the show. As always, the phone lines are open for if you want to use them. Talk about today's NFL stuff, 855-212-4CBS, college coaching stuff, yesterday's Army-Navy action, the Baker Mayfield Heisman Trophy win, all of that is on the table. You can also hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Scary moment between the Steelers and the Bengals when Ryan Shazier goes down and is carted off the field. No feeling in his lower extremities. He's been hospitalized all week. And reports are that there are some positive signs, but we have no verification that he is able to walk or he is able to feel his lower extremities, which is terrifying. So what needs to be said probably doesn't need to be said, but we all, hearts go out to Ryan Shazier because, yes, it's a violent game, but it's heart-wrenching to hear of a young man who's one of the best defensive young players the Steelers have and in the game maybe never being able to walk again, let alone play again. Having his career taken away from him, it just kills you, guts you to hear something like that. So prayers up for Ryan Shazier of the Steelers. Pittsburgh has to try to rally emotionally after that game, after that loss, knowing that their brethren, one of their guys, is in the hospital fighting to walk. They've got to go out there and play football again against one of their physical foes in the Baltimore Ravens. And then next week against one of the best teams in football, the New England Patriots, that might decide home field advantage in the AFC playoffs. That's what Pittsburgh has to try to recover from. And I think it's easy for us as spectators to sit in the comfort of our own living rooms, on our couches, watching our flat screens, just expecting these guys to go out and play their guts out again. Boy, this is a tough stretch emotionally for what is holding over them. They've got cleats that they'll be wearing, some of the Steelers players, with prayers and shouts to Ryan Shazier as they pray for their guy. So this is not an easy spot for the Steelers. And it's also the spot where we begin as we're coming in hot.
2-1, you've got a pair of bogeys, 12 o'clock.
They're doing 500 knots.
Roger, that's your bogey.
Airspeed is still increasing.
Wood, you got them?
Not yet, I can't see them. They must be close.
Yeah, attention, air control. Someone tell DA he's coming in hot. This is CBS Sports Radio, over.
Mike Tomlin updates us on his linebacker.
From my perspective, obviously, it was a tough evening. Man, Ryan's a trooper. Had an opportunity to spend some time with him. Man, he's in really good spirits. Tough guy. He's got great support from family and loved ones there. You also got to acknowledge it's probably difficult for a lot of men to stay focused and play with their brother laid flat. So that's an element of ball as well. Thankfully, the guys stayed on task, man, and were able to do the things necessary largely over the second half to march back.
The Steelers are using the hashtag #SheLeave, as in Believe, as in Ryan Shazier, man, and you just hope the best for that guy. But it also means that the Steelers are in a crucible right now of their football season, And not only do they have to emotionally get over that, but they also have to figure out a football way to get over that, because Ryan Shazier is a great, important defensive piece of their puzzle. We know how good Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and that offense can be, Juju Smith-Schuster. The defense, though, has been the question mark this year, and also playing down to competition. Losing Shazier at this point of the season for the rest of the season is a difficult blow. And the New England Patriots are not a great team this year. But like every year, they don't beat themselves. They're not a great team. I think if they were the NFC, they could be beaten by anybody that makes the NFC playoffs. Anybody. Give me 1 through 6. I think the Vikings can beat them. I think the Rams can beat them. I think the Seahawks could beat them. The Eagles. I think the Saints could. The Panthers could. But it just keeps opening up for New England. So who in the AFC is going to be the biggest hurdle? That division is garbage. They're going to get an easy win again against the Dolphins this week. And then they're going to go into this Patriots-Steelers game. The Steelers are going to be dinged up after two ruthless games against the Bengals and the Ravens. They'll have lost Ryan Shazier. Not to say that the Patriots haven't dealt with injuries as well. Obviously, the Hightower injury, a big one. The Edelman injury before the season, a big one. But I'm not so certain that the Steelers, after these 2 weeks against these two foes, are going to have much left in the tank to take on the Patriots in a couple of weeks. And if they don't, it means they've got to go to Foxborough again in the playoffs. And last year, we saw what happened against them in Foxborough. Didn't play a very good game. And the Steelers have always seemingly fallen far short against the Patriots in the playoffs when they faced off against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. So a crucial couple of weeks for the Steelers team. And they got to do so dealing with the Shazier injury, both emotionally and from a football standpoint. Jerry Jones tried to stand in the way of Roger Goodell's contract extension. That didn't work so well, as the NFL extended Goodell with bonuses he can make up to $40 million a season. And so all that rat-a-tat-tat from Jerry Jones talking about how bad of a commissioner Roger Goodell was fell on deaf ears.
The commissioner works for the owners. I can show you many positive things that this commissioner, Roger, has done, is doing, and I can show you some things that he wants to take back. This is a very example of it. I'm sure he'd like to take back his initial Ray Rice stance and a few others, and he's in the process of trying to correct that, and in doing so, Zeke is a victim of an overcorrection.
So that's Jerry Jones at 105.3 The Fan, our Dallas affiliate, but Jerry had egg on his face now, and he has black eyes now, because Jerry has been a guy within NFL circles who has built up a lot of credibility. He's gone into the freaking Hall of Fame by making big decisions with the NFL. Thinking big and downhill, thinking big and down the timeline. And yet what this was the rest of the owners going, Jerry, we usually trust you. In this case, you're wrong. Because Jerry was being petty and vindictive about the suspension to Ezekiel Elliott, and it let it get the best of him. And I think that Jerry getting into the Hall of Fame has swelled his ego even more to where he thinks he's the commissioner. But Jerry Jones before the season had signed off on Roger Goodell getting an extension. Is it a lot of money for a commissioner to make $40 million a year over 5 years, $200 million? Yeah. But most of this is incentive-based. Apparently, the base salary is in the single digits millions, which is still very nice, but let's say it's $9 million, and then the rest of it comes out of incentives. How? Why? It's all based on their revenue. It's all based on how much the owners make. And the owners making the billions that they're making are more than willing to share and pitch in $1 million apiece every year to keep a commissioner intact in tow that takes all the bullets for them and makes sure they keep making money. Jerry was the guy that said no, 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 no. But he never said no, no, no when the checks were flown in. It was only when Zeke was suspended. So Jerry Jones ended up looking foolish in this. His ego got the best of him. And finally, Army-Navy in the snow yesterday. How fun was that?
Beggs calling for the football. Good snap. Ball is down. The kick is up, and it is no good. No good. He missed it to the left. Army has won the ball game. The Black Knights have defeated Navy. Wearing uniforms honoring the Army's 10th Mountain Division, the Army football team's climb to glory reaches the summit of Service Academy supremacy. Army defeats Navy 14-13 and captures the Commander-in-Chief's trophy for the first time since 1996.
Rich DeMarco, Learfield Radio, Army Radio on the call. What Jeff Munkin has done at West Point is nothing short of incredible. You heard that they won the Commander-in-Chief trophy for the first time since the mid-90s. So we're talking about 20 years ago, which means they ended up being the best Service Academy team this season with Navy and with Air Force. Jeff Munkin has now won 8 games last year and beat North Texas in the Heart of Dallas Bowl. This year, he's won 9 games and will be playing in the Armed Forces Bowl. Jeff Munkin, to have 17 wins in 2 seasons is a miracle at West Point. It's a miracle what he has done. They have not been this good over a 2-year period since the mid-80s. It's been 30 years since Army's been able to hold its head this high back-to-back seasons. Let me give you the years prior, the win totals prior to Jeff Munkin taking over 4 seasons ago. 3-2-3-3-3-4-2-1-3-1-3. In 2003, Army went 0-13. 0-13. I bet you didn't even know that a team that didn't win a game could play 13 games. Usually they say if you lost your first 12, you don't get another one. Army went 0-13 in the early 2000s. Munkin took over 4 years ago. It's been a slow build, but he went 4-8 that first season, 2-10 2 years ago, and then last season 8-5, this year 9-3. A thriller in the snow yesterday, just an awesome spectacle every single season. And Munkin deserves all the credit in the world. That triple option is tough to defend, and Army's got it cooking heading into the Armed Forces Bowl. Awesome, awesome scene yesterday in the snow. When we come back here on the show, Todd Furman's going to join us, our Vegas virtuoso. Let's take a look at some lines and some action, how Vegas looks at today's NFL stuff. Coming up here next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Winners, whiners, and wise guys. It's Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio.
You win.
Each week, we catch a red eye to Vegas and see where the sharps are putting down their scratch.
Place your bets.
It's Todd Furman.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Football. Damon Amendolara, DA with you. Always a treat to be welcomed in as we speak to Todd Furman, our Vegas virtuoso, looking at today's NFL lines. What's going on, Todd? Good morning.
Good morning, DA. Should be an interesting day as we figure out what the pecking order will look like in both the NFC and AFC playoff pictures, my friend.
So let's start with what I think should be the game of the day, and that is the Eagles in Los Angeles against the Rams. This is interesting for a bunch of different reasons, but also how about because the Eagles are coming off that loss in Seattle, and it makes you wonder how much of their success early in the season was against non-playoff caliber teams. How did Vegas view the Eagles after what we saw against Seattle?
Very interesting when you look at the way the number moved last Sunday night for Philadelphia's trip to the Pacific Northwest. I mean, that price ballooned as far as 6 before professional bettors came in hot and heavy on the Seattle Seahawks, crashing that number down to 3.5 and rewarded for their confidence in Pete Carroll and company. The interesting part for this weekend's game against the Rams, had this game been played last weekend, we'd be looking at Philadelphia right around a 2.5-point favorite. But you're forced to make adjustments based on recency bias. Obviously, the absence of Zach Ertz is going to play a major role. for Philadelphia today, given that he's Carson Wentz's primary weapon to throw the ball to down the middle of the field. You look at this Rams team, though, and have to wonder how much the off-the-field situation with the Southern California wildfires will impact some of their preparation. Interestingly enough, the public has not been dissuaded. About 70% of the tickets on this one coming in on Philadelphia. Meanwhile, you've seen a little bit of professional action on the Rams. Should be fascinating to see it unfold. I personally would lean towards the Rams without any real strong conviction here.
It's interesting that you brought up the wildfires in California, off-the-field stuff happening with the Pittsburgh Steelers as well, although part of it is on-the-field stuff with the loss of Ryan Shazier and what he's dealing with right now. How has that affected how we look at the Pittsburgh Steelers going into what I'm going to imagine is another physical game later on tonight against the Ravens?
It's definitely played a role. This number opened as high as 7 in some locations. We'll call 6 more or less the consensus, and that's where you saw some very real professional money coming on Baltimore. You look at Pittsburgh, not only do they have the physical game on Monday night, you mentioned the situation with Ryan Shazier, but the fact this game doesn't mean nearly as much to the Steelers as it does to the Ravens as they try and secure one of those elusive wild card bids. Pittsburgh, of course, the season will hinge on next weekend's game when they welcome in the New England Patriots as far as potentially securing home field advantage throughout the AFC. Very interesting when you talk about the revenge angle working for Baltimore as well. The thing for the Ravens, though, they've really been able to thrive against teams that can't match their physicality in the trenches. That's not going to be the case with Pittsburgh, at least I don't think, on the outside. But you do worry about the level of focus, the level of engagement for the Steelers, knowing the Ravens have major revenge. I'm fully on board here with why folks have been backing the Ravens, pushing this number down to that 5-4.5 range.
Todd Furman-Jones, our Vegas virtuoso. As we look ahead to Steelers and Patriots next week, it's interesting because the Patriots are huge favorites tomorrow night in Miami. But for both the Steelers and the Patriots, they can afford a loss this week. And then as long as they take care of business and beat the opponent, whoever wins that game next week, they would have that head-to-head tiebreaker if they went out the rest of the way and have that number one seed potentially in the AFC. So with the Patriots being huge favorites against Miami, is 11 too big a number, knowing that the Patriots don't necessarily have to win that game to still be the number one seed?
That's exactly how professionals have kind of viewed this, thinking that this is an awfully big price tag for New England to lay against a Miami team that they just beat a few short weeks ago, with everything to play for next weekend. In a game, by the way, that if you look ahead at that number, DA, New England would be about a 2.5-point favorite if that game was played today. So you look at Miami, I think this number will come down from where it sits. It's 10.5, 11. Sportsbook's more than happy to try and welcome in professional dollars on the Dolphins, considering every single week they seem to get their brains beat in with New England action since the Patriots have figured things out on the defensive side. New England, one of the best records against the spread in the league, as they currently sit at 8-4 right now.
What an interesting line it is in Jacksonville, where the Seahawks are actually the underdogs against the Jaguars. Not something we would often say, but the Jags are favored by about 2.5 points in this game. What does this tell us about how Vegas looks at the legitimacy of Jacksonville?
Interesting when you also consider that this number opened Jacksonville 3.5-point favorite. So oddsmakers had very strong sentiment towards the Jags, essentially saying that Jacksonville would be slightly better than Seattle on a neutral field. Professional bettors and the general public disagreed on the open, taking that valuable 3.5, putting those points in their back pocket with the number crashing to 2.5. Now, 7 out of every 10 tickets coming in on the road underdog in Seattle, so you can understand why that number moved, especially when you factor in the Seahawks' record under Russell Wilson during the month of December, 20-5 straight up, and Jacksonville struggles in their own building, going 6-12 against the spread their last 18 home games. But I think there are a number of intangible factors that play into Jacksonville's favor here. Seattle making that long road trip across the country in a bit of a short week, having played on Sunday night. And oh, by the way, a showdown next weekend with the Rams within the division. I think Jacksonville treating this game like their Super Bowl makes the Jags a very compelling short home favorite here. We'll know if they're for real, if their defense can go out there, put Russell Wilson under duress, and Blake Bortles is able to protect the football.
Another really good matchup is Vikings and Panthers. And the NFC late season schedule's been great. We've gotten all these great games against the best teams of the NFL or the NFC against one another. This is going to be another one of those. For the Vikings, we know how good their defense is, but Case Keenum's actually been very, very good as well. The Vikings are favored by 2.5 points going on the road to Carolina. How much of that equation is Vegas believing in Case Keenum?
Yeah, Case has kind of surprised everybody, professional bettors included, when you look at the Vikings as being one of the most undervalued teams in the NFL seemingly every week. So far this year, they're 9-3 against the spread. But, D.A., if you played this team blindly over its last 45 games, you'd be talking about a 32-13 against the spread record. The last 27 times Minnesota has been favored, 19-8 against the number. And that's part of the reason we've seen this price go from Minnesota -1 on the open, trending towards 2.5. A lot of skepticism about Carolina as well, the health of Cam Newton and their ability to move the football on the ground and through the air. You look at the Vikings, though, a little bit of a difficult travel spot considering it is their third straight game on the road and not a long-term recipe for success. But given the balance they've shown on offense, leading on Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray, along with an underrated receiving core led by Adam Thielen, the Vikings still appear to be one of the best-kept secrets as far as the betting market is concerned, and that's why they get money from the professionals seemingly every week.
Todd Furman, our Vegas virtuoso. One of the lines I'm scratching my head on is the Chiefs game. The Chiefs and Raiders are both 6-6. Kansas City's been a disaster over the last month and a half. And yet, at Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs are favored by 4.5 points. That feels like a lot of points to be favored by when you've lost 6 of your last 7 games. Why did Vegas put it at that?
This is a team I think that everyone kind of is waiting for them to turn the corner. Will they start to look like the Chiefs we saw early in the season? Obviously, many frailties on the defensive side that aren't going to get that much better with Andy Reid electing to suspend arguably the team's most talented defensive player in Marcus Peters. But you look at this Kansas City offense, and so much is being made of Alex Smith and some of his shortcomings. But last weekend in their loss against the Jets, Kansas City averaged 10.3 yards per play, which is absolutely unheard of. The problem for the Chiefs is they only ran a little over 40 plays from scrimmage. This weekend, Oakland's going to have to try and figure out how they can move the ball consistently with only Michael Crabtree in the receiving core. I think for the first time in a long time, we're going to see Kansas City at its best, both on the offensive and defensive side. Arrowhead has been a house of horrors for Derek Carr, and professional bettors believe that Kansas City can do more of the same this week as the Chiefs will look to go to 7-6, potentially setting up an even bigger showdown next weekend in the AFC West when the Los Angeles Chargers come to town.
You're also the host of the Bet the Board podcast, and so what do we got looking forward to getting to the Bet the Board podcast this week?
Did a lot of deep dives on some of the bigger matchups that we touched on here this morning. Also found a best bet out on the West Coast for one of the late games in the afternoon slate. So if folks haven't had a chance to listen to Thursday's podcast, encourage them to do so. We like to say it's the best pregame show in the business and one of the only ones that will actually make you money on an NFL Sunday.
So make some money. Listen to the Bet the Board podcast and follow Todd on Twitter at Todd Furman. As always, brother, thanks so much, man. Enjoy football.
Thanks for having me, D.A. Enjoy the games, brother.
We talk to Todd Furman every week here on Sunday Morning Football to get the view from Vegas. D.A., CBS Sports Radio. When we return, we've got the insiders. Let's hear from a football, Pro Football Hall of Famer on ending a dynasty. Let's hear from a former Patriot coming in hard against Rob Gronkowski. And do we have the Giants head coaching job all wrong? That's next. Plus, we've got your football forecast, CBS Sports Radio, Sunday Morning Football.
You're locked into Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio with your host, D.A. We ask those who are in the game for their thoughts on the game.
Congratulations, man. That's all.
It's time for The Insiders.
Sign up to be an O'Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O'Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. Fast, easy, free, only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Welcome back, everybody. DA with you here on Sunday Morning Football. You can always watch us at watchda.com. The New York Giants have a new coach of the sideline, Steve Spagnuolo, their defensive coordinator, former Rams head coach. Is the interim head coach after the Giants parted ways with Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese earlier in the week. I asked Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBS Sports, is the Giants head coaching job a good job?
No, I don't. I think it's interesting that the Giants are just blindly considered a blue blood job that's great. I mean, you know, it's like Packers, Steelers, Giants, proud franchises, history of tradition. Patient, virtuous in their football roster building. You just fired a coach 13 games into the season after you won 11 games last year and went to the playoffs. So maybe put the brakes on that. You ran Tom Coughlin out after he won 2 Super Bowls. I don't know. Maybe pump the brakes on this patient roster building thing. I mean, the Giants had lost their identity they were acting in a jetsy way. I mean, the Giants have been, over the last 24 months, the Giants have been a lot closer to the Jets, and the Jets have been a lot closer to the Giants. That's just facts are facts.
The Insiders.
So I will disagree with Will Brinson on one point of that and agree with him on another point. I do think the Giants have gotten into Jets territory this season. And they got into Jets territory the last couple of seasons because they have let Odell Beckham run on his own. Whatever Odell wanted to do, they never reprimanded him, and it got out of control, as evidenced by the boat situation last year before the playoff game, and how often he was acting out during games, creating 15-yard penalties and all of that, and they always continually defended him because they realized he was the only thing that they had that was dangerous on the offense, at least dangerous in a good way. Their offensive line was dangerous in a bad way. They also, with Ben McAdoo, had a head coach that could not connect with his players, that had an ego the size of Manhattan, and so he could never get past the fact that he was a terrible communicator, a terrible leader, and guys did not follow him. You had an owner that didn't want to be part of this, just wanted to be hands-off, and then finally swooped in when it was such a dumpster fire that the entire city had revolted against the Giants. Those are all Jets standards. But where I disagree is that the Giants' job is not a good job. The Giants, yeah, they ran Tom Coughlin out of town because the fans and media didn't want him around anymore. But because of those two Super Bowls, they let Tom Coughlin have four straight non-playoff seasons. Coughlin was allowed to go 9-7, 7-9, 6-10, 6-10. He got 4 years of not making the playoffs, three of which were sub 500. I don't think they didn't show patience with Tom Coughlin. Number two, yeah, they ran McAdoo out after he went 11-5 last year. There is no descriptor that would be appropriate to tell you how much of a disgrace McAdoo has been this year. It's been one embarrassment after another, and they're 2-10. I also don't think firing McAdoo is unfair. So they've shown a lot of patience, probably too much with coaches, and they'll have a top three draft pick, which they could potentially get their next franchise QB. I think the Giants head coaching job is actually a very good job. Former NFL linebacker, all-pro, Pro Bowler Chad Brown had played for the New England Patriots. I asked Chad Brown if he thought that Rob Gronkowski should have been suspended for more than one game on his dirty hit to Tre'Davious White.
Absolutely. I think there needs to be a clear line between something that happens in the course of a football play versus something that has nothing to do with football. You hit a quarterback too low because you were being pushed in the back. That's in the scope of a football play. You're a safety coming up to hit a receiver across the middle, and he ducks and brings his head down to now where your helmet or shoulder is. That's in the course of a football play. The crap that Gronk pulled, the crap that Aqib Talib and Crabtree got into a couple of weeks ago, that has nothing to do with a football play. I think that should be fined, and the suspensions as far as games should be at a much higher level than anything that occurs during a football play.
The Insiders.
I agree with Chad Brown. That's the dirtiest football play of the season because it didn't happen during a football play. It happened after the play was over. Tre'Davious White is face first on the ground. And Gronk takes 6'5", 265, and pile drives his shoulder into the back of Tre'Davious White's head, which slams against the turf, gets him out of the game, and puts him in concussion protocol. It's dangerous. It's childish. And it should have been more than a one-game suspension. I've got no problem if you want to suspend Juju Smith-Schuster for a game for what he did on Vontaze Burfict, but that's in the middle of a game. That's in the middle of a play where inches decide a penalty or not, where centimeters decide an injury or not. I get it. You want to keep the game as safe as possible? You want to take dirty hits out of it? Fine. Suspend Juju for a game. But a guy that after the play loses his cool and puts a guy into concussion protocol, that deserves more than a game then. If that's where the bar is, Gronk deserved to get more than a game. And that guy is damn lucky. for being the doofus oaf that he is. He is damn lucky he didn't get more than a game, because two games would have taken him out for the biggest game of the Patriots season, which was the Steelers game. Patriots are remarkably fortunate. The NFL decided to only go one game on Gronk. Extremely fortunate, because that doofus deserved more than a game, and it should have been taken out of the Steelers game. Aeneas Williams, the opposite of Gronk, total class. Pro Football Hall of Famer that would have never speared a guy that was defenseless face first to the ground. Aeneas Williams was the subject of A Football Life this week, an NFL documentary, a great series done by the guys at NFL Films and broadcasted on the NFL Network. And I asked Aeneas Williams what it was like to be part of that Arizona Cardinals team in 1998. Interestingly, we had Jake Plummer on the show earlier last hour. He was the quarterback. That Cardinals team was terrible for the entire 90s. And Aeneas Williams was there losing 11, 12, 13 games every year. They finally break through. The only time he went to the playoffs as a member of the Cardinals. And they went to Dallas and they beat the Cowboys in 98, which was essentially the exclamation point on the end of the Cowboys dynasty. I asked Aeneas Williams what it was like to be part of a team, the Cowboys, that had bullied the Cardinals for the decade. The Cardinals finally returned the favor.
I can almost smile right now, because not only to beat the Cowboys, but to beat them in their stadium. And matter of fact, I joked in my Hall of Fame speech, as you remember, Damon, that's when they had the stadium with the hole in the roof, where it was declared that God, it was the hole in the roof because the Cowboys were not only America's favorite team, but God was looking down on the field. I jokingly said, when we finally beat them, that must have indicated that God was now saying, hey, I have someone else like the Cardinals. Because when you see the piece, you're going to hear Michael say over and over, the Cardinals. He could not believe we had beat them 7 years, having never gone to the playoffs, but to beat the Cowboys in Texas Stadium is one of the highlights of my career.
The Insiders.
And that, of course, was a Cowboys team that still had Aikman and Emmett and Michael on it. And the Cardinals went in there, and the Cinderella cards behind Jake Plummer and Aeneas Williams got the win. It effectively ended that Cowboys dynasty right there. And finally, Nate Burleson from Good Morning Football on NFL Network and the NFL on CBS was discussing this week of discussion of the safety within the NFL. And I said, you know, Nate, do you have concerns about the future of the game?
What I do hope is that, you know, at some point we can find, one, a level of consistency and what's a bad hit and what will be flagged and what will be fined and what guys will get suspended for. And then over time, guys can continue to go back to the very basics of football, which is always seeing what you're hitting and removing your head from any hit. We shouldn't be shocked anymore that guys get injured. It's just like, shouldn't be shocked if a guy is a boxer and he has delayed speech when he gets older, or a basketball player has bad knees, hips, and ankles when he gets older, or a pitcher, you know, has elbow problems, shoulder problems when they get older. These are all things that we sign up for.
The Insiders.
I think Nate Burleson makes a couple of interesting points there, and the NFL is never going to be completely safe because it's a collision sport played by big, strong guys at violent speeds in a field that is inevitably going to be like a pinball machine. But I understand the NFL wanting to try to make it as safe as possible, because when you watch that Monday night game, Bengals and Steelers, how many of us watched it and said, I wouldn't want my kid to play in that game? Or even if it was just, man, you want a certain element of violence to it because that's what makes the NFL interesting, but you don't want it dangerous where guys are being carted off, because it's much harder to put that to the side and just continue to watch football and smile and drink a beer and eat your Cheetos. So the NFL is kind of caught in what I believe is an unwinnable war. Football will always have to be violent. You can't play football without collisions. But they're going to try to make it safer, knowing that you can never make it completely safe. Let's get to your football forecast, boys and girls.
CBS Weather Watch, our forecast with your personal touch.
It's DA's football forecast.
In Buffalo, temperatures are in the 30s, snow showers potentially in the forecast, and a 90% chance of Bills fans being shown their beating heart yet again. Temple of Doom style, Nate Peterman is next up as the Bills try to save their playoff chances. They're 6-6 with a bad Colts team coming into town. Normally you'd say, okay, the Bills have a playoff berth to play for. If they can win out, go 10-6, maybe they make the postseason. First time since 99, Colts season is over. Jacoby Brissett under center, you should win that game. But Tyrod Taylor out, Peterman comes in. Peterman was a disaster a couple of weeks ago in LA against the Chargers. So what happens today? You've got to hope that the rookie Nate Peterman, who threw 5 picks, is the one to save your season. Bills fans going, what? This is our lives. What did we do to deserve this? In Cleveland, temperatures also in the 30s. Snow showers potentially in the forecast with a 95% chance of the Packers handing Aaron Rodgers the baton at 7-6. The Packers need to win today because 10-6 is the only way you're getting into the NFC playoffs. You can't be 9-7. The Packers already have 6 losses. They've got to beat the winless Browns in Cleveland. But again, the Browns are 0-12. They're likely to go 0-16. And if the Packers get it done today, they get Aaron Rodgers potentially back next week for their final 3 games of the season. And how fun would that be? I'm sorry, Browns fans, but you guys don't even really want to win anyway, right? Because you've got a parade set up at 0-16. So we should all be rooting for the Packers to win today, because if they do, the final 3 weeks of the season with Aaron Rodgers coming back to save the day would be incredible theater. And finally, in Denver, temperatures in the 60s. A beautiful day in December. Sunny skies with a 100% chance. We are reminded... just how long ago 1998's AFC Championship game was. Remember, Jets at Broncos in January of 98. The Broncos, one of the best regular seasons ever. They were 13-0 at one point. It was a great first half. Jets had the lead. In the second half, the Broncos ended up running away and into the Super Bowl. This year, Jets at Broncos feels a lot different than the AFC title game. And that's your football forecast. So today, week 14 of the NFL season will kick off in about 2 hours from now. Thanks to Stu Kovacs as your executive producer of today's Sunday Morning Football. Mike Samsel on the wheels of steel, a great job as well. Chris Venezia producing our digital simulcast at watchda.com. Kevin Dexter on the updates, and Nico Saraceno helping us in the producing duties as well. Enjoy football, everybody. This is Sunday Morning Football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.